Like, the aristocrats might actually be more true than the Ten Commandments.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Everybody. Hello.
Hello. There was a countdown again.
Yay. The countdown returned.
That must mean we have a producer.
That's right. That must mean that. We are doing episode 13 of Recotopia today. The big recommend is going to be Locke. Mm-hmm. And we are, yes, look at the chat. It is brimming with comments already. We are shouting out the people in the chat right now. Thanks for watching us today. We're going to be talking about a wide range of movies today. No mm-hmm. doubt about it. Anyway, no. My name is Chris Atkinson.
And I'm Jeremy Scott.
Yep. And let's start with a small recommend.
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
I'll start it off with, this is one of those things. You here's a movie you probably never heard of before, but mm-hmm. I was recommended it a few months ago. I finally got around to watching it. I had to order it special on Amazon to find it. It's called Zulu. It came from 1964. It is an introducing Michael Caine movie.
Wow.
I will say that the "and introducing" probably a different spirit back in the 1960s, because okay. Michael Caine had a lot of credits before this. I don't think a lot of big movies or anything, a lot of TV, a lot of things like that. But I was recommended this movie, and it's a battle that happens in South Africa between British soldiers and Zulu warriors. Back in the day, the Zulu warriors had already gotten finished with, they just completely destroyed a British regiment of some sort in a battle. And then the movie starts off by showing us a bunch of the Zulu dancing around, and a lot of the men are getting married to the women in the tribe. And we see it through the eyes of these missionaries from Sweden who are trying to pass along their faith to the Zulu. They find out while they're there that, they're about to attack. This group is about to attack a small area, that the British have, and it's just being used as a hospital, but they're in the area and they've just gotten off of a fight from British. So they're going to go fight them. And it's really interesting how this movie, portrays the sides. I think there's still a big, like, British, I would say there's a British, I don't know. It's more balanced than normal. Like, it doesn't portray the Zulu necessarily as bad guys or anything. It's just that there is still a bit of a British kind of a bent to it, because all the British characters have names like, you know, like Jonesy and you know, like, they have the nicknames, and we get to know about their lives and everything. The Zulu, we don't really get to know that much, but the way the Zulu attack this fort and everything is really interesting. How they discuss how they're going to defend this fort is really interesting, and the battles are really well staged. It is 1960, so there's a lot of pulling punches and pulling, you know, a lot of, like, stuff that's not exactly connecting there. But this is a really well made movie that I would recommend to everyone, and you get to see Michael Caine in what would be his, I would think is his early 30s, I believe, is when this movie came out. This is his and introducing role. So a lot of good acting, a lot of good action. I would recommend it.
Excellent. This is one of those movies that I'm not sure I've heard very much about. I've certainly never seen it, so this is going on the list. And I'm going to start off with my small recommend. As I think you did a similar thing last week, this is a show that's not over yet. Mm-hmm. So take that in mind. Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty.
Yeah, man. This is when I saw the previews for this, I was like, I'm watching that, and I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, well, I got somehow, I do this a lot. I have odd pattern. I got sucked into episode 6 mm-hmm. Without having seen any of it, and then went back and basically binged over a day and a half to get caught up. Mm-hmm. So the latest episode to air is 8. There are 2 more. First and foremost, the best thing about this is the cast. Everybody's having a really good time and or giving a great performance. Just some of the cast is John C. Reilly, Jason Clarke, Gabby Hoffman.
No, wow.
They've listed it in order of appearance, so I have to jump around a little bit here because it's Sally Field, Adrian Brody, Tracy Letts, your boy, mm-hmm. Jason Segel, Wood Harris from The Wire.
Yeah.
And this is in the 79, basically Magic Johnson's first season with the Lakers, and Dr. Buss, the basically Hugh Hefner of sports owners, played by John C. Reilly, decides to spend all the money he doesn't have and put it on this team this year to win a championship. He renovates the stadium. He introduces this new club for, it's basically like a strip club for VIPs, and he turns the game experience into a party in many ways that sort of revolutionized sports. And this is following everyone. It's following Dr. Buss and his family. Sally Field is his mom. It's following Jeannie Buss, his daughter, as she learns what a terrible human her dad is. It's following Jerry West, the former coach who's just stepped down but can't quite leave the organization behind. It's following Tracy Letts, who's the coach they bring in from Portland, who wants to do an all-up tempo, and he actually ends up revolutionizing the sport of basketball. Pat Riley is Adrian Brody, who has a ring on his finger for the Lakers, but can't get a job as a color analyst for them these days. This is an Adam McKay-produced deal. So I am kind of impressed that I'm enjoying it as much as I am, because I haven't enjoyed his last couple of films. This show breaks the fourth wall constantly, and it's not just one character. Many scenes are punctuated with somebody turning the camera and going, fuck. and it's pretty effective. What is falling short for me so far, the only caveat, is that it's pretty heavy-handed or lazy with some of its themes. So Pat Riley wants to get a job as a color analyst, can't leave the sport behind, doesn't know what to do with his life. He's drifting, right? Mm-hmm. What should we do? Let's have him walk down to the beach. And let's put a big-ass piece of driftwood there and have it kick around on the sand a bunch while he stares at it. The show does this constantly.
Oh, yeah.
somebody's feeling surrounded on all sides, cut to a shot of vultures picking at the carcass of an animal.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't like that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
There are also weird music choices straight out of Boogie Nights in scenes with John C. Reilly. And
yeah.
I don't understand those choices either, because those songs are permanently Boogie Nights for me, even if they were 70s staples. And then you put it in a scene with one of the stars of Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's raunchy. There's lots of language and sex. They're not shying away from Magic Johnson liking the sex.
Mm-hmm.
there's a lot of interesting player dynamics. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a veteran at this point. I'm enjoying it. I'm hoping they'll pick it up for another season, and I can see where it goes from here. But that's a recommend. The only caveat there is it's pretty raunchy and you know, it's pretty heavy-handed with some of the imagery, but it's really fun, man. I'm having a lot of fun.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely want to watch this at some point. All right. My second small recommend comes from 1994. It's called Chungking Express. I watched this on the Criterion Channel. This comes from Wong Kar-wai. This movie, I had no idea going into it what this was about. I had heard of it back in 1994 when this came out, and I never got to see it. It's weird because it's two different stories that they tell. It's almost, I don't even know if you would want to call this an anthology, because it's just two stories and they tell them separately. So the first story is a guy who's just broken up with his girlfriend and he keeps going to this snack bar place, and the guy behind the counter is like, you should ask this girl out behind the counter, she's great and whatever. And but she has the same name as his girlfriend, and he thinks that his ex-girlfriend is going to come back to him, and he has a system set up in place where he's buying pineapple stuff in a can that is nearly at its expiration date. And he feels like if he can buy 30 of these before May 1st of 1994 or whatever, and eat them all, and she doesn't call him back, then it's not meant to be. So that's sort of the first story. He also starts falling in love with this woman who is a straight up gangster. He's a police detective, buried the lead. He's a police detective. So like there's a point where he meets this woman at a bar and he tries to hit on her and the movie goes to an uncertain, I don't want to spoil anything at that point. But he meets her at a bar and then we go on into the second story. The second story stars, Tony Leung, who a lot of people, know from Shang-Chi, from the past few months. It was his American debut. Tony Leung is also in the movie Hard Boiled. It's him, and he has just broken up with his girlfriend, and there's another girl behind the counter that this guy, and it's the same store. But this girl obviously likes him, but doesn't show it in any way. She's always playing that California Dreamin' song by the Mamas and the Papas, always playing that song. And but she's sort of in love with him from afar. One day his ex-girlfriend goes to the store saying, is he on his beat today? This guy, Tony Leung, also plays a cop. Is he on his beat today? And they're like, no, he's not on his beat today or whatever. It was like, well, could you give him this? And it's basically just a key from his apartment that she's returning back to him. The girl behind the counter ends up taking this key and visiting his apartment whenever he's not around. And so like there's scenes in there where he's like talking to his inanimate objects, like he's talking to his soap and stuff like that. And he's like, you were once so big and round, and now you've just wasted away or something like that. And but then there's one day he goes in and goes, wow, you seem a little bit bigger than you used to. And so like there's stuff like that happens. And this is going to an uncertain end as well. It's a very unusual movie.
Yeah,
and it's well worth watching just for that, because it's fun. The on the picture here that a lot of people will not be able to see on who are not watching the live stream, the picture of this girl here is the girl in the second story. Oh, she's wonderful. Oh, she's so wonderful. You will fall in love with her immediately, even though she is basically committing crimes in the movie, but it's a lot of fun. So I would definitely recommend Chungking Express.
Wouldn't be the first criminal I fell for.
That's true. That's true.
All right. So much as I did last week, I'm going to recommend a movie that Rotten Tomatoes does not like, or at least I'm going to make the case for this movie.
This is a 2014 film, mostly starring Jason Bateman, called This Is Where I Leave You.
Mm.
This has a 44 on Rotten Tomatoes, but a 6.6 on IMDb, which is a little less bad. But on Rotten Tomatoes, before the show, I was reading through some of the negative reviews, and it's fascinating how many of them said one kind of version of, I expected to laugh more with this cast, or it didn't push enough boundaries, which is interesting. There are laughs to be had, but this is a dramedy. This is basically, if you've seen Home for the Holidays with Holly Hunter, or if you've seen, The Hollers with John Krasinski, family members, many adults coming back to the home, bickering, long, bitter disputes come up, comedy ensues. This is that kind of a movie. What happens is the father dies. He was an atheist Jewish person, and his dying request was for his four sons to all come back home and live under the same roof for 7 days, which they say is sitting Shiva, which I'm not familiar with Jewish practices at all. Of note, that's interesting. This is directed by Sean Levy or Levy. I don't want to mispronounce his name. Most recently made The Adam Project and Free Guy. He also made Real Steel, Pink Panther movies, and The Night at the Museum movies. So his track record is not awful. I'm not going to tell you this movie's amazing, but let's look at this cast really quick. We have Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Jane Fonda, Rose Byrne, Corey Stoll, your boy Adam Driver, Catherine Hahn, Connie Britton, Timothy Oliphant, Dax Shepard, and Ben Schwartz.
Oh, yeah.
This was before Ben Schwartz was famous for being Ben Schwartz. He plays a rabbi who grew up with the kids, and they used to call him Boner when they were kids. And now that he's a rabbi and they're back as adults, they keep calling him Boner, and it pisses him off. I don't know if you've seen this movie.
I have.
Go ahead.
I was pleasantly surprised with this as well when I saw this, because I had been given nothing but negative reviews about it as well. But I watched it and thought, oh, this is really good. And yeah, you guys, unless someone is so typecast, I don't know if you should really worry about what they've done in the past. Just see if this thing works for you on the level that it does. I think a lot of people get other characters mixed in with their other work too much in some of this stuff. And Jason Bateman's one of those, because Bateman for the longest time was this guy from Arrested Development or whatever that was in a lot of these other movies. And it is kind of hard, but like now that he's done Ozark and all that stuff, of course Ozark he had not done by the time this movie came out, but you can tell, you could tell he had something a little bit more.
I mean, Driver is given the much more straight up comedic role. He's very much playing similar to the character he was on Girls, very, very unpredictable, hilarious. And Bateman has some laughs, but he's depressed. He just caught his wife cheating on him, and now he has to sit in a house with seven days with his siblings that none of them like each other. And I have seen this movie three times now, a couple times maybe back when it came out, and then most recently like 2-3 days ago, and I was just reminded how much I enjoy it. It's not going to break any ground. It didn't win any Oscars, but way better than 44% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. By the way, sitting Shiva is a 7-day period of mourning. The first time I heard it was in A Serious Man, and it's sort of tossed off as a funny like one-liner thing where like I don't know if you ever saw A Serious Man, but. But there's a point where the cops come to try to get Richard Kind because of some like gambling thing or whatever. And he's like, do we have to do this right now? We're sitting Shiva here. And he keeps saying, we're sitting Shiva here, you know, and stuff like that. All right. On to the big recommend.
The big recommend.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Okay, so this week's big recommend is also from 2014, and it is called Lock with an E. And I just watched this morning. Okay. I try and do my viewings for these things as close to recording time as possible. Like, usually we go at 11 central, so I wouldn't have time in the morning to watch a movie, so I usually do them on Monday afternoon. But this time, when we had to bump the schedule, I knew I would have time, and I waited. And I savored this thing today.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it since I recommended it to you maybe 5-6 years
Really? Ago. Wow.
And I have seen it with new eyes.
Yeah.
I have seen things in this film that I did not see before. I think I have done a 180 on my opinion of the choices made in this film.
Ooh.
But let's start with the basics. Locke is a story about Tom Hardy. He has left this big concrete poor job site to go to a hospital in London where a woman that he had a one-night stand with is about to give birth to a baby. He thought he had time to plan all this, but her water broke early, 2 months early. So on the way, he has to call his second-in-command and inform him, hey, the biggest pour in the history of Europe is about to go down, and it's all on you. He has to call his boss and explain. And he has to call his wife and say, I'm not only not coming home tonight, I slept with this other woman, got her pregnant, and I'm going to go there tonight to be with her and the baby. So it's a lot more than simply a guy driving, making phone calls, even though that's a great way to pitch it once you've seen it, because that's just giving you as little as possible going in, and this movie will punch you in the gut all over the place. And we just get to watch him. We get to watch his face, his emotions, his mannerisms, as he experiences all these emotions. I love this movie more than ever, having seen it again for this podcast. What's your overall opinion?
Yeah, since you recommended it a few years ago, this is probably my fourth run through on Locke. It's such a short movie, and it's easy to put on. Yeah, I love it more this time than I did the first time. One of the things in this viewing that I noticed that I didn't really notice before was when he is stopped at the light at the beginning of the movie, he makes the decision right there. I never really like got that before, that he made the decision right there, because he's like at this light, it changes. He doesn't go through it. Somebody honks at him.
Yep. And,
then he turns on his signal. And you've got to think about everything that he decides right there. He doesn't have to do this.
No,
he doesn't. There's absolutely no reason actually for him to do this other than to show his dad that he's better than him when it comes down to this type of thing. And whether or not he is better than him, I don't know. That's a really interesting question, I'd say, because it seems like he is the exact same person his father was.
It's so okay, to get to the meat, let's jump to the end. He loses everything for this one decision that he makes on principle. And it's not just principle. It's not just, I'm not going to do to this kid what my dad did to me. He's mad. There's so much pain. When he's talking to his dad in the back, who's not really there, he's not saying, I'm not going to be you. He's saying, I would like to dig up your bones and bring you to the hospital so you could watch me be better than you, and it will be the best day in hell because they don't have to deal with you for 24 hours. He's so mad. And this viewing, that's what I keyed in on, is trauma. And what trauma does to a person and how long it stays with them and how it can impact. He's so mad, he's not going to do the same thing. And in making that decision, he does the same thing to his existing family.
Yeah, that's what I get out of it. That's what I was sitting there thinking. I was like, you're this is a sick version of the trolley problem, right?
It really is. That's a good point.
Because he could have. Now there is another interesting layer to this too, though. On this one that I didn't really realize the first couple of times that I watched, his wife, after finally coming to the resignation period, after she's cried about it and she's been angry about it, she starts thinking about all the bad stuff that he did, or the stuff that was annoying that she let go because he loved, because she loved him and everything. And then you start thinking maybe this guy's obsession with buildings was going to cause the end of this marriage anyway.
Yeah.
And it's interesting reading the trivia to this, because the, who was the actress who plays his wife, Ruth Wilson, something Wilson, maybe? I don't remember. She was told, like, somewhere midway through all of this, and I think Tom Hardy filmed his thing in 6 days. So, like, that, I guess this movie got shot basically in a week, but
that's awesome.
He kept on introducing new wrinkles, and he wanted her to play the part as if someone who was thinking about leaving him before this happened. And now she's finally got a reason to do it. And you can tell that in her voice when she starts talking about the concrete he leaves on the kitchen floor. And
no longer have to scrape stone off the kitchen floor.
Right. And like his whole life, he travels, he goes all sorts of other places, for months to do pours. And like, he came home happy, not because he slept with some woman. He came home because the building got built.
Yeah.
And that's where his happiness.
Yeah, and he's telling her that like he's trying to get out of trouble, because he's saying, no, I wasn't happy because of the sex.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks this is an excuse. This is going to save him. I was happy because of the building. And you loved your buildings more than us all along.
True, yeah.
Oh, my God. I actually think right at the end, when the older son, I think it's the older son, is explaining that goal that happened in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Tom Hardy, I believe that is the moment he realizes, I just became my father to them.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not going to do it to Bethan's kid. There was no way he wasn't going to, he put himself in a situation where there was no way he wasn't going to turn into his father for some kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, how much of that was subconscious? How much of that was the PTSD of growing up and hating that father that was just always lingering there? Is that why he took a job where he could be gone for months and not actually have to get too close to his wife? There's so many ramifications here. Once I start examining generational trauma through the lens of this movie, or vice versa, it hits so much harder. The first time I watched this movie, I thought, yes, good job, dude. You did not do what your dad did. You made a principled decision and you stuck to it. Mm-hmm. But this time through, I'm 100% in the opposite camp. Dude, you fucked up. Like,
yeah,
you had no good choice, but you chose poorly.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and unless Bethan, played again wonderfully by Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
If she is the type to start calling him at his house, which we haven't gotten any indication that that's the case.
Yep.
I guess it is the right thing. It's definitely the right thing to tell, but like, there's no winning. There's no winning from that. That's why it's such an interesting choice for him to make this choice. 'Cause you know, what would you do in that situation? I'm not sure. I'm pretty honest to a fault, like he is. I probably would do the same thing he does, but I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, though. Like to because you know what this is going to cost your family. But going back to the goal, which is another interesting thing about this movie, I don't know if this was conscious or not, but it seems like everybody's having a moment that they normally wouldn't on this day. Bethan is having her child 2 months early. Locke is deciding to, against all of his own self-interests, has decided to say goodbye to his job and his family to make this drive. And this guy Caldwell, who kicks two goals in the soccer match, in the football
match. He's a donkey.
He's having the best game of his life apparently tonight. And then what it's making everybody else do, the it's almost like Locke's decision is affecting everybody, even inadvertently somehow. Like, how does Caldwell get affected by this is what I'm sitting there like wondering during this whole thing. Is there some semi connection between the two? When Locke calls, his second command play fucking fantastically by Andrew Scott, by the
amazing.
Way, we had a question last week about a character actor becoming a Brad Pitt, George Clooney type of career. This fucking guy, man.
Yeah.
And there's that scene, it stands the hairs on my arms when he's telling him, like, you don't get to tell me how to act, you know.
Yeah.
But Hardy takes it all in stride. He knows he's a fuck up in this situation. He's ready to take all the abuse, and he knows he deserves it. But goddamn Andrew Scott. Hearing about this and being like, oh Jesus Christ, oh no, and he's gonna have to do all this stuff himself. But I think a lot of people out there have been in situations like this, right? Like, where not this exact situation, but you are a second person, you know the job, but you rely on the other person to do all the decision making. Now you're the guy who has to make the decisions, and you will end up being very good, if not close to what this guy represents to you. That's what I feel like Andrew Scott is, even though he's drinking cider and and everything.
One can of fucking cider.
I think we all know that he's going to be capable when this pour happens tomorrow, because we can tell the way he talks over the phone when he inspects the rebar and he finds out that it's not going to be able to withstand the load and all this. And I love all this little industry jargon, like the C6 concrete and all that, and like how it can't, like, some of these concrete mixing companies are like, well, can you do just a little bit lower than that? Like, no, we can't do lower than that. You're just trying to cheap out on the deal. Once he inspects that rebar and realizes it's not going to hold the concrete, and he calls, Locke about it, that's when Locke is like, okay, well, I know these guys who will help you set it perfectly and everything, and this guy is learning, sort of on the fly, that there are a lot of solutions to problems that you didn't think of before. So
I love the detail that even we were talking about how everyone's having a unique night for them and an out of character night for them. Even his wife had finally put on the shirt she's wearing, the soccer jersey, and I think that only exacerbates her reaction, because she's like, I finally did this thing for you, only for you to do this thing to me.
Yeah.
I also love how exacting he is. And this, there are details about his personality. The conversations with the sons, I think, show him to be a good father. But with his wife and with his boss, he keeps correcting them during tense conversations when there's no need to correct them. Gareth, his boss, is saying,
oh yeah,
I told him you've been with us for 10 years. He's like, 9 years. He's
right.
Like, okay, whatever. The point is, you're fired. I went in there. I told him you never had a foot wrong in 10 years. And he's like, 9 years. And I'm like, dude, this just stop. But this is part of probably what makes him really good at his job, is that he is so exacting. And I think that's why that stuff is in there. But even his wife says something about the road. Are you still worried about the road closure? And he's like, it's not a closure, it's a stop and go. And I think that's what makes him good at his job, but bad at familying.
And there's another thing too with Andrew Scott, where he's saying something about like, it's C6 then, or something like that. And he knows it's C6, but Tom Hardy's like, it's not a question. It is C6. That's what it is. He's like, it's like, well, sometimes I say things and it's not really a question. I'm just, you know, and he's like, I'm just saying it's not C5, it's C6. And he keeps going back round and round about this.
What does it say on the whiteboard, Donald?
Right, right.
What else do we have to say about this before we move on and jump into
some... I don't know. This is an interesting... I have run into people who do not like Locke, and I guess I can see their point about it. I don't know. I can't share those feelings, though, but I guess it doesn't feel cinematic to them, or, you know, this is something that you could just do on the radio if you had to, or whatever. I don't know if I totally agree with that, just because there are a lot of images in this, and this... I think it's required. I don't know if people real and like you may have had these in your lifetime, these long hour and a half, 2 hour drives late at night to a certain place. And like, and there's something to the feel of that you require that I don't think radio can capture. And there are some images in this that are really cool. Just seeing how the light reflects off of the windows and just how, just the night imagery that goes on in this. It's very plain and simple, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't think you can totally do this on a radio show or anything like that. You have to have that driving feel, that night feel, that, you know, of all those things that are all those little weird places that you pass in the night onto this one place. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it when people don't like it, but I've run into more people who like it than don't.
I agree. I don't think I've met anybody who doesn't like it. But you know, to each their own. I do have a question. How much of the budget for this movie do we think came from BMW?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Like, I feel like they had to have gone at some point to maybe more than one car company and said, look, here's the movie. Mm-hmm. This guy's making all these dramatic, life-changing decision phone calls while he drives to London. We're going to be showing this car every frame.
Oh, it could be very well a good bulk of it for sure. And I know also that this was an agreement between Tom Hardy and Stephen Knight, the director, that Stephen Knight would write the series that I can't remember which series this was that Tom Hardy was in, but this was an agreement between them that Hardy would do this in exchange for Stephen Knight writing his series that later on. But yeah, BMW probably picked up a good amount of this tab. You would think Tom Hardy is probably not commanding a huge paycheck, even though he had done Inception and stuff like that by this time. And that's all you have. That's all you have to pay. Really. You have to pay, you know, probably, you know, England some money, and then you have to pay
England.
You plan to play your crew and Tom Hardy. So
yeah, they did a TV series called Taboo, aired in 2017, and Stephen Knight was the showrunner.
Okay, yeah,
nice bit of trivia there. I've not seen that show. I may need to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before we do questions though, we do have two more items of business.
That's
the
right,
first being the super secret surprise double feature.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Yes. Interesting. Going through what this could have been. I ran the gamut on this from stuff like Glengarry Glen Ross, which is very like you know, it's a nighttime film.
Yes.
And it's got the same kind of it's very talky, and it's very, you know, it's got that same feel. It's got that mm-hmm. feel of being up all night, even though Tom Hardy's drive is only an hour and a half and it's after work. So it's not like he's right. doing this at like, you know, 11, 12, 1 o'clock or whatever. But another movie, and this is not the answer, but another movie that I thought of this movie while doing it, we did an interview with a director. His name was Eugene Kotliarenko, who did a movie called Spree. It stars Joe Keery. And it's this guy the whole movie talking to what his phone on a, in a, in, while he's driving around, committing crimes. So it's basically him, but it's not, it's this movie, that movie is so not really what Locke is. Locke is a lot quieter. Spree is a big, louder kind of movie, especially with all the violence and everything that occurs in it. But ultimately I ended up on Buried, Ryan Reynolds, movie where he's in a coffin, the whole time. And he has basically all he has is a cigarette lighter, and a phone, and maybe a couple of messages here and there or something to try to work his way out of the coffin by the end of it.
And a very unique technique of punching, fingertip punching, that he learned after he climbed all the steps.
That's right. That's right. Wiggle your left toe. Buried is one of those movies where it's just the one performer the whole time. And I would, even though Ryan Reynolds is probably bigger in his career than Tom Hardy is in Locke at this point, he was not huge when Buried came out, even though right. he had a couple of hits that people referred to until Deadpool came out. But yeah, this is another one where I feel like this is a perfect, this is that they would have a this is, you know, these are similar in some ways, even though Buried has got a lot more stakes to it. Yeah, thought that would be a good one.
It looks like Patrick was just about to suggest Buried right when you said it, and he said, damn it, but I guess he got it in under the wire. some people are saying 11-14.
Oh.
I'm not familiar with that film.
I think I've heard of that. Let me see. 11-14.
It's not the one with... 2003... black comedy thriller, ensemble cast, Rachel Lee Cook, Ben Foster. All right. Henry Thomas, Barbara Hershey, Clark Gregg.
Yeah, Colin Hanks.
All right.
Okay.
Check that out.
And was it, what is it about? Events leading up to an 11:14 p.m. car crash from five different perspectives.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I also see Phone Booth.
Phone Booth was one that I thought of actually as well, because that's basically Colin Farrell the whole time. The only thing is, but Phone Booth, that ended up not picking it is because there are a lot of other characters that show up in Phone Booth. Yeah, mm-hmm. Forrest Whitaker shows up, and Rhoda Mitchell, I believe, is in there, Kiefer Sutherland's in his prime 24 voice going on in Phone Booth. But yes, Phone indeed. Booth is a great one. That's one that I actually thought of and was a semi contender there for a while. I just forgot about it on that run. But anyway, yeah, good stuff.
All right, we are now ready. If you get your pens and pencils out to jot down next week's homework mm-hmm. assignment. It's Chris's choice this week. Chris, what is next week's big recommendation?
Next week, it is 1992's John Woo film, Hard Boiled, starring Chow Yun-Fat. And now, I looked this up. I know one of the things that has been a little bit frustrating for some is that we've picked a lot of movies that are not streaming. This one doesn't have an official streaming option, but YouTube, someone uploaded this movie to YouTube, the entire movie, about 8 years ago, and from what I can tell, has never been dinged about anything. So you can watch this movie on YouTube, 2 hours and 8 minutes, the full thing.
Well, I bet if we did a Sins video for it, they'd
they probably block it. Would
copyright.
They story. Probably would, but this movie is bad fucking ass. It is nothing but action supreme. Like, the movie is 2 hours and 8 minutes, and I think an hour of it is set at a hospital for the climax. So, but this is John Woo. This is the reason why he ended up getting invited to America to make Face Off and Broken Arrow and stuff in Hard Target and things like that.
We love the Doves. Just do stuff
with
the Doves. Okay?
That's right. But Hard Boiled is amazing. I can't wait to start talking about that. I haven't seen Hard Boiled in years, so I am looking forward to revisiting it.
I'm sure I only saw it because I rented it after I saw Face Off. I'm sure of it. So it would have been like 93 or 94 since I've seen it. So I'm excited about this one. Love the free on YouTube pull there, because I actually Googled and was like, I don't see any streaming services, but Chris had that one right.
Yeah, there. I looked this one up, just typed it in to after it. The Real Good app told me it was for rent on YouTube. It may very well be, for all I know, but I typed the name of it into YouTube and the movie came up. So, so you can watch it on YouTube.
All right, now. Let's move on to some questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
All right. First up today, if you were throwing a party and could invite three movie characters, who would you invite and what would you have them bring? Loving the podcast and keep up the good work. I would like to state that I immediately interpreted the question to be food. But honestly, I'm reading it now, and you could ask Batman to bring like his CD collection or what have you.
I interpreted it as food as well, because that's the guest thing to do, to bring, you know, a casserole or some rolls or something like that to a big dinner party of some sort. But anyway, first off, I'm going to start off with what many of you might consider boring. Andre Gregory from My Dinner with Andre, I would invite to this. Now, that's a character. He is ostensibly playing himself in My Dinner with Andre, but Andre Gregory is going to bring the conversation for sure.
Okay.
He's lived an interesting life. Then I'm going to have Mary Cameron Diaz from There's Something About Mary.
Okay.
Because we need to have a funny woman who's also not too difficult to look at as well. In this party. Andre is going to be bringing a snack from one of these getaways that he talks about in My Dinner with Andre. Like, he's been to a lot of different places. Mary is going to bring Foods on a Stick, because that's what they talk about in There's Something About Mary. Foods on a Stick, and then Ben Stiller brings up the food in a cone, and nobody does food in a cone anymore. We're going to bring Jules Winfield, played by Samuel L. Jackson, to our party, because at this point he may be wandering the earth like Kane in Kung Fu. He may not be doing gangster shit anymore, but he will have a lot of great stories for us as well, and he's going to be bringing the tasty burgers.
He does know. I mean, he's the burger connoisseur, so you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very good. Very good. You thought about more than just food. I kind of did a little bit. And I see a comment over here from Patrick saying, I love movies about eggs. I don't think I told him this, but my theme is eggs. So the first person I'm inviting is Harley Quinn, and she's going to bring that egg sandwich for everybody from Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's Harley Quinn. She's going to keep things interesting at a party. you might wake up in Nova Scotia with Harley Quinn.
Absolutely.
I'm inviting V from V for Vendetta. He's got lots of stories, but he can also bring eggies in a basket for everybody. Cooks for Evie. And then there's a movie called Big Night that, if you love food and love movies, you should watch, with Tony Shalhoub and Stanley Tucci playing brothers who run a restaurant. It's all about making this big dinner for all these reasons, and everything goes amok and whatever. But it ends with basically an uncut 5-minute scene of Stanley Tucci making a frittata. And it's mouthwatering, but it's also just great movie making. And Stanley Tucci's character is going to cook frittatas for everybody.
That would be fantastic.
If you don't like eggs, don't come to this party. And after this party, I don't want to be around you for a day or two.
By the way, Patrick says he would invite the wrestling announcer from Spider-Man, the snooty usher from Spider-Man 2, and the French waiter from Spider-Man 3, which are all Bruce Campbell. So, you know, that would be a perfect thing to have three Bruce Campbells. In the same vein, Apathy says something about Larry Moe and Curly. And you know what? Bruce Campbell played Larry Moe and Curly essentially in Army of Darkness, because Sam Raimi is a huge Three Stooges fan, and he did a lot of like Three Stooges homages in that movie. Let's see, what else is on there? John Travolta's character from Pulp Fiction, several of those $5 milkshakes. Hell yeah. Genie from Aladdin brings a hot tub. Kate Bishop and Yelena from Hawkeye, and they can bring bikinis. Ooh, don't judge. You're right. Nick Frost from Hot Fuzz. Audrey Hepburn from Breakfast at Tiffany's, and Maddie from Euphoria. Oh my God, everyone brings bacon. So yeah.
Well, that bacon party can happen right alongside my eggs party. And,
yes.
We're going to co-mingle right there. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to the next question. In the spirit of one Ian Whittington watching the unbearable weight of massive talent and The Northman back to back, come up with a double feature you'd want to see with the most different and opposite movies possible.
This could have gone so many ways, right? I had so many thoughts of like the beginning movie and what it would go with and everything. I ended up on Airplane and Goodfellas.
So you chose two good movies that are just opposite ends of the I guess emotional spectrum.
Yes.
Oh man, what would be awesome is if there somehow was somebody in both of those movies.
Oh, I know.
I went wrong. I went Paddington 2, and then I'm going to show you 8mm.
What's hilarious about this, aside from the two, that is wrong as fuck, by the way. Aside from this, weird, combo, is that in The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Nicolas Cage has there's discussion about Paddington 2 in that movie.
Oh, I've actually seen a clip of that on YouTube.
Oh, you've seen the clip?
It was hilarious.
Okay.
Yeah, where Pedro Pascal makes him watch it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, Paddington 2 is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
good answers over here. 12 Angry Men and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Holy shit. That is very different. Yes. Although Everything Everywhere All at Once pairs with a lot of movies in this category because it's so unique. Paddington 2 and Human Centipede. That's really bad.
That's the same direction I was going, though. Mm-hmm. The Mist and It's a Wonderful Life. That's a good counter programming there.
Mm-hmm.
Ten Commandments and the Aristocrats.
Yeah, talk about some real, like, you're not only different thematically and tone-wise, but you also have one's a fictionalized representation of something that happened, and the other is a documentary. Like, the Aristocrats might actually be more true than the Ten Commandments.
Well, you may be right, because the Ten Commandments, much like Prince of Egypt, does not really give Aaron like his full propers. They tend to lean Moses heavy in that story. So
yeah.
Maybe they fictionalized that as well. I still remember being on the Paramount lot with you when they told us the story of how that parking lot right there was filled with water, and the blue background on that building is where they shot the parting of the Red Sea.
Yeah. Man, yeah.
Blew my damn mind. Yeah. All right. Next question. Take a movie, put it in a completely different genre while changing as little as possible.
This may not be completely different genre because I think that it has some elements of this, but I would make The Cable Guy a horror movie straight up. And that way you get, I don't know. I like The Cable Guy fine as it is. I don't want to really change it really, but just imagine if that's a real horror movie, whatever, where all the things that happen in there have a different tone, and it's either Jim Carrey playing it straight or it's some other actor, because at the time Jim Carrey, you know, is going to always bring out some funny and everything. But Cable Guy is borderline horror anyway, but this is the thing that I thought of. So
no, that's what's fascinating is the story of that movie is they were originally leaning into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even Chris Farley was considered.
Yeah.
And if they had made that a straight comedy with Chris Farley, it probably would have made more money. But I feel historically that movie was saved by Ben Stiller and Jim Carrey's decision to add that darkness into there. But yeah, I would love to see it go all the way dark.
Mm-hmm.
See what that take looks like. I decided on Skyscraper.
Yeah.
Because all you have to change is the score and the sound effects, and it's instantly a comedy, and it's no longer an adventure film. Because literally everything that happens in that movie is absurd. You just throw some, you know, boppity boop 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 and some laugh track in there, and this thing is a number one hit. what are the chat people suggesting?
Patrick says he sees the Truman Show poster in the background and thinks that that could be a horror movie for sure. Truman Show is a horror movie, definitely. Especially, I guess, if I guess he would just never know it, know that he's being filmed, or he knows and he can't say anything, or else he dies or something. I don't know. But yeah, Toy Story is a horror film. That definitely is on the table, because we've seen even Toy Story itself has some horror elements, even though it's very lighthearted, but it has horror elements in it. Toy Story as a horror movie would be good. Texas Chainsaw as a musical. Holy shit.
Well, you'd have to change a lot if you're going to put songs into that thing. But
it would be fun. It would be a lot of fun. 28 Days Later is an action movie. Die Hard is a musical.
Everybody wants to sing it.
Yeah. So, anyway.
All right. Well, let's move on to what will probably be our last question. If you could cast yourself in a cameo role for one of your favorite properties or favorite directors, what would it be? And why?
I would want to be in a Judd Apatow comedy, especially like early on when he was doing Knocked Up and 40-Year-Old Virgin and stuff like that. He started to get a little bit more, I wouldn't say dramatic, but stuff like This Is 40 and even Trainwreck and stuff like that, they have more drama to it, and Funny People's the same way. It has more drama to it than normal, even though they are basically just straight up comedies, all of them. But I'd like to be in one of these movies where you have people who are, you know, encouraged to improvise, and I'm sure it's just a whole bunch of fun on the set. Maybe it's not, I don't know, but Judd Apatow, I feel like, would be a lot of fun to be on. That's where my answer goes.
I think that's a fascinating way to look at the question. Like, what would the experience be like being on set? And I wonder if that comes from you having actually experienced being on set of a film where maybe wasn't so fun because you were face down in a mud puddle all afternoon. I just went for like the posterity of it all. Like, what would I want to see my own face in? Anything in a Batman movie. I'll play any guy you want in a Batman movie. I don't need a line. Just zip by me and I'll be happy. I'll be like Stephen Colbert in the Hobbit movie. Most people won't even see me. If I do get to have like a line or a scene, I think I would want to be in a Ben Affleck movie. Because he's one of, in my opinion, the better directors, even though it's been a while for him directing. Although, did you see the news that he and Matt Damon are going to make a movie together that he's going to direct and they're going to co-star? It's going to be about the founders of Nike going after Michael Jordan, who they eventually landed and put their company on the map. So that sounds exciting to me. It sounds like it could be a little Ford v Ferrari with a Ben Affleck touch. What do we see here in the commentary? An Edgar Wright movie.
Yeah, Edgar Wright would be fantastic. Although he's also like he's very technically brilliant and everything, and maybe I don't know. Being on the set of those movies aren't as fun as they seem on screen, but it could be. I don't know anything about that behind the scenes of those movies.
Yeah, no, we don't know.
Yeah.
This says, I think I understand this right. Donald Glover, I think he means like maybe he wants to work with Donald Glover and he wants to be.
Yeah, to play a horrible white person in a Donald Glover movie. Yeah, absolutely.
Put me in a red shirt, kill me on Star Trek. Slab, is that Ian with your handle? Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Chris could have a cameo as the guy behind Locke honking at him in traffic.
Yeah. And not much of a horn honker, but lately, holy shit, am I a horn honker. Patrick says, I'd want to see Chris and Jeremy in a Kevin Smith movie where they just randomly walk in and start sending everything. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be down with that.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
Give Kevin a call, Patrick. See what he's got open.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right.
I want to be a Wookiee in the Star Wars holiday special. Yeah, that's a good ending right there.
Bit my Wookiee.
I beat the smart kids. thank you, everybody in the chat. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for pivoting at the last minute to a new time.
Mm-hmm.
Your homework for next week, both in the chat and listening later, is Chris
Hard-boiled. 1992. Yeah, get to see John Woo and Chow Yun-fat at their absolute best. Although there are some movies that contend for the title of their sure, respective sure. careers, but this is mine.
Like The Replacement Killer.
Yeah, like The Replacement Killers. Yes. Yes. That one fits. Also stars the aforementioned Tony Leung in it. So you know, a lot of you who've just been introduced to him in Shang-Chi are going to get to see him and see why lots of people find Tony Leung so attractive, because yes. That's what he is. That's what he is. He's attractive and he's amazing. Anyway, yeah, that's going to do it for our episode of Wreckatopia. Thank you guys for watching us, and thanks for listening.
See ya.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
All right. That'll give people time to go pee. That's good. Yeah, the last couple of games, is just not seeing a team that's on fire for Lord Stanley.
Yeah, they're certainly allowing a lot of goals. They're not scoring as many as they should. I don't know. I mean, it seems like every time I turn it on, it's like, I've yet to watch a full game in a long time. But like every time I flip it on, it's like they hit a post and Willie Donick's like, oh my God, that's like three posts. I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys, maybe shoot towards something else now and try to get it in that way. It's funny, during all of this, looking through emails for, scripts and who wrote what scripts and all that. there was one script that you turned in, I don't know how many years ago it was, where it was like, here's the final for blah, 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 and the Preds fucking lost was the title. And you're like, and you're like fucking Preds fucking lost. Here's the script for this. And
like the whole soccer hooligan thing, like the European soccer, I don't know shit about it, except it's evil and terrible. And no, I'm just kidding. But I know that they'll yell racial slurs at certain players in certain arenas.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm hoping American soccer doesn't devolve into that, although seeing the Yankees pelt the Cleveland team with debris doesn't give me a lot of hope for American sports.
No. Yeah, there's a whole video of players, what they did after they heard racial epithets being thrown at them in European soccer leagues, and they're all like really awesome things that they did. Like one of them was like this guy walked off the field, and his team also walked off the field, and the other team walked off the field.
Awesome.
Awesome. And there's a video like top 10 things that happen when people were racist in soccer games or whatever that players did when people were racist, and it's really good, really good video.
That's interesting. Oh, let's get deep, everybody.
Yes, yes.
Get deep. Let's talk about death and
death.
Carbon taxes. I got totally jobbed by this restaurant who did the whole pictures are way better than the actual presentation. I found this place that was even a little bit of a drive, and on the website, basically, in addition to a bunch of food, they had these amazing looking charcuterie boards. And my wife and I weren't quite ready for full lunch, but we had some errands to run, and I was like, let's go all the way out to this place, get one of these badass charcuterie boards, And then along the way, driving back home, we'll hit all the places we need to do our errands. And if we get hungry, we'll stop for, you know, second breakfast or whatever. We get there, and it's two salamis I can buy in the store. Three cheeses I can buy in the store, specifically Munster, Gouda, and Swiss. Exotic. Five blackberries, a twig of maybe six grapes, an unwrapped, like, Dove chocolate, and some salted cashews, and some, well, they look like communion wafers. My wife said they had a little bit of herb hint to them, but they were basically styrofoam little crackers. I was like, this is not the picture. This is not what's in the picture. I don't even, I'm even going to tell you what I paid for that fucking thing.
I'm sure it was expensive, but you know what? It's probably not nearly as bad as what I paid for nachos at Regal.
No.
This was about a year or two ago. Oh, it might have been when I watched Tenet. I'm not sure. I can't remember. It was a few years ago. Now, the nachos that I remembered from working at Regal were perfectly fine. They weren't great by any stretch, but when you bought nachos, you had a reasonable expectation of how many nachos would be in there, and it was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
It's still expensive. It's still overpriced, but whatever. You get them, and they're fine. But now they've reverted to bag of Tostitos or bag of Doritos, basically. That's so awful. I did not know this. I bought, they had the Doritos version, and I was like, oh, cool. So they have some sort of Doritos version of the nachos that I remember buying at that. And it took forever for them to find it and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, shit. And then he shows up, you know, with a plastic tray and a fucking bag of Doritos in there, not even a big grab. And I'm like, oh, so I'm paying what? I think it was like $8 or something for this.
Was there anything to dip it in or put it on?
I think they put the cheese in, sure. Oh, and then you can, okay. and you ask for jalapenos, and they have a little cup of jalapenos. They don't put those out on the serving station anymore.
Jeez.
And so, like, I was sitting there going, this is a bag of fucking Doritos, man. This isn't even, like, some confectionery company's, like, version of Doritos. This is a fucking bag of Doritos.
Well,
this is unconscionable.
They're selling Pepsi again, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Pepsi and Doritos have an ancestral relationship.